May meeting order. For the record, Senator Fisher, Senator Coghill, Senator Jones are in attendance. On today's agenda, we have Senate Bill 310, establishing Marine Highway Authority, and motor fuel tax exemption, Senate Bill 180. We'll take up 180 first. And Senator Coghill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 180 is a rather simple bill. It's an act relating to the exemption of motor fuel tax and extending the exemption from the requirement of obtaining a certificate for the use of fuel sold to heating commercial on heating commercial premises and providing for an effective date. Currently in statute, we have an exemption for motor fuel tax use for heating private or commercial buildings. However, in order for a fuel dealer to obtain that exemption for a commercial building, the dealer must obtain a certificate of use, and that's in AS 4340010, subsection 1. Dealers do not have to obtain a certificate for the use for fuel used in private residence, but for fuel used in commercial buildings, they have to. And usually, if you really take a look at the real life of a fuel dealer, and I know a little bit about that. I put 35 years of my young life into that business. That if there's any skipping on tax, it would be the other way around, because most of your commercial buildings are larger tanks. They're usually underground tanks, and there's no way that they can get to them. And Senate Bill 180 eliminates that certificate of use. So all it is just a headache for the dealers, and it creates a tremendous amount of extra cost for the dealer, because the commercial building, they're not looking for it. So looking to have to sign something, and when you're delivering, the first delivery, you're out of compliance if you don't get that exemption certificate. Real simple, straightforward bill, and I understand that the agencies are promulgating rules and regulations, but I think that we have a duty here to make sure that there's a finality to this business, and that we get this certificate out of the way. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fisher, any other questions? No questions. Okay, let's move to Fairbanks. Walt Schofield, you'd like to testify? This may be your second time on this bill. I think we visited this last year.
Yeah, thank you. This is Walt Schofield, and I'm president of Petrostar. And my family, prior to Petrostar's purchasing sourdough fuel, owned sourdough fuel, and I was the manager there, so I have a long history, not quite as long as Jack's, but some history.
More
little history on certificates of use. I'd like to give you some history as to when they came into being. Early in the 80s, legislation was passed, which established the certificates of use, and at that time, I believe that the dealers were having problems as the middleman between customers and the Department of Revenue as to collecting tax for motor fuel. And heating fuel being a non-taxable item, they were having difficulty on those sales where they felt that diesel fuel tax, motor fuel tax, should be collected by the customer. They'd tell the customer that they thought it was taxable, and the customer would say, well, then call it heating fuel, and I'll vouch for it. And without anything in the file, the dealer maintained liability for that, and I don't think that the dealers had some problems with that, and so they asked to have certificates which the customer can then certify and bear the responsibility for declaring it a non-taxable type product. That is the initiation of the certificates of use, and that was for fuels used for motor fuel. When the legislation was written, it included an exemption from the tax for heating commercial and residential buildings. However, it required a certificate of use for commercial buildings. That was almost 10 years ago, so why is that a problem today? Well, we in audits, which occur regularly, probably annually, our sales are audited to determine that we are properly collecting tax on taxable sales and not collecting it on heating fuel or other exempt sales. The auditor, initially after the legislation was passed, establishing the certificates of use, understood the problem that we have commercial heating fuel customers that are getting an exempt fuel, and it was an onerous, a burdensome disregarded the statute and the regulations and allowed that there need not be certificates for those particular ones. However, if we had a suspicion that a sale could have been for a taxable use, we were assessed if we didn't have a certificate. But generally, to cover our own backsides for those customers who perhaps were burning diesel fuel and wanted to not pay the tax, we had a certificate on file so that we would not incur any liability for those sales, which we felt were for motor fuel use. The auditor understood that. The auditor appreciated that we were through the certificates of use, relaying that obligation to the customer and giving a pretty good audit trail to the department on customers who were declaring it heating fuel but potentially were using it for motor fuel. In the last 3 years or so, that auditor has retired. New auditors are in and are strictly interpreting the statute and regulations and are requiring certificates of use and annual customer lists for commercial heating fuel accounts. In fact, not only are they requiring them, but since this is new, it was kind of a shock. We were billed for in the commercial heating fuel deliveries that we made to the audit period that he checked. And we paid $1,400, I believe, for the tax on fuel, which was actually not used for taxable purposes. However, we didn't have the certificates to verify that. So the problem, although it was dealt with long ago, is a new problem now because the auditors are strictly interpreting the regulations. That is why the issue has come up now, and we have asked to have the certificates not required for commercial heating fuel accounts, which we have quite a few. My competitor's sitting in the room, so I don't want to tell you how many, but it is certainly a large administrative task, and I appreciate the department's compromise last year on this issue when they changed it from an annual certificate of use to a one-time certificate of use. However, administratively, I don't know how you folks have files, but files are always interesting, and if they're one-time type files, which you're not going to go back and review, I think there's a large potential for perhaps having missed getting certificates 10 years from now. I'm sure that I couldn't probably verify that 75% of my commercial heating customers had a certificate on file, even though we may have had it at one time. So the problem hasn't gone away. A one-time or an annual, to me, both are headaches and problems. And so I think that we should just not have to have the certificate. I think that you would find, the auditors would find, that since we want to not incur any liability for taxable uses, we will be getting the certificates for those uses we believe in our delivery process are probably for taxable purposes, but the customer doesn't want to or wants to say it isn't. The auditors are going to find that we have those slips because we're not about to want to pay 8 cents a gallon for fuel we sold that is used as questionable. I have one other point, but I can't remember it now. So appreciate the time to be able to testify in this, and I appreciate your interest in the issue.
Thanks. Well, is there anyone else in Fairbanks that would like to testify?
There's some more people, and I don't know if anyone has any questions of me before I get off this.
Well, hi, this is Jack. The bill, Senate Bill 180, is still in its form that we left it last spring, and that's the bill that you're testifying should be passed, correct?
That's correct.
All right, thank you. Say hello to Shelley. Is she going to testify?
She's shaking her head. No, this is Bucky Wright, Jack.
Hi, Bucky. How are you?
I'm at least one of the competitors Walt may have been talking about a while ago. I'm Bucky Wright. I'm vice president of MAPCO Alaska Petroleum. And I'm speaking on behalf of two operating divisions of MAPCO, Express Fuels, which is a heating fuel company in Fairbanks, and Nenana Fuel Company, which is a commercial fuel company based in Nenana that serves the Yukon River and Norton Sound areas, as well as a lot of other areas in the bush. And for the record, we would speak in favor of the legislation and urge you to pass this on out of the committee, and then when it comes on the floor to vote in support of it. Without being too redundant and saying a lot of what Walt already has said, we too think that this that this existing requirement that we have on file certificates of use is an unnecessary administrative burden that serves no real purpose for the state, for the dealers, or for the customers. I would recommend one thing. We are very happy with the form of the bill from Senator Coghill, you mentioned it's in the form that it was in last spring. We're happy with that form, but we would ask you to consider adding one thing. The major thing this bill does is it exempts fuel used for commercial heating from the requirement of certificates of use. We would ask you to consider also exempting from the requirement of for certificates of use fuel used in stationary power plants. In our business, we do, in addition to the fuel that we sell in Fairbanks, we sell a lot of fuel out of the bush, a lot of which is used for power generation. That fuel is exempted from taxation the same as commercial heating fuel is. And it really falls into the same category where we would have to keep a certificate of use on file for selling this fuel for non-taxable purposes and would be liable if we did not to pay the tax even though the fuel may be used for non-taxable purposes. Out in the bush, every village on the river, on the Yukon, but other rivers as well, generates their power from diesel fuel. And some of these power generators are owned by the local municipality, some by private individuals or co-ops or what have you. And it's a wide range of customers. We also have customers of miners out in the remote areas of the state. Who use fuel for power generation, and it's sometimes very difficult because we don't deal in person. We deal over the phone or through the mail, and we'll get a phone call from a customer saying that they need fuel, and they want it out on the next barge, and there may not be any mail where they are, or it's a message from somebody that's run into this person, and they said, when you get to the village, call Nenana Fuel Company and order my fuel to show up at such and such a point. And it's very difficult, if not impossible, to then send a piece of paper off to this person to have them sign the certificate of use and get it back to us in order for us to get the fuel out in a timely manner. So we would urge that you would consider adding, I believe the way it's worded in the bill, on the second page of the bill, there are three numbers that list sections of Alaska statute. And I don't have the statute in front of me, but you could list F, J, and K, and there are two or three of those subsections in the statute that deal with stationary power plants, and I would ask you to consider just adding in those sections that deal with stationary power plants. As to the general problem of these certificates of use, we also have experienced some problems with our heating fuel companies. We were audited in the summer of 1988, and it was discovered that several large customer accounts of ours, we did not have certificates of use on file, even though the fuel was clearly for non-taxable purposes. We were required to pay those taxes, which we did, and then had to go back to the customer and tell the customer, remember that fuel you bought from us a long time ago, we didn't have a certificate of use, and so we had to pay the tax on it, so we're going to charge you the tax. And they said, well, it wasn't. It was for non-taxable uses. We said, yeah, we know, but since we didn't have it on file, we had to pay it, so we have to charge you. But you can get it back from the government from the state because you don't owe it anyway. And it was really kind of at best a frustrating exercise. And as it turned out, some of what we tried to go back and collect, we were not able to for various reasons. Fortunately, some of the customers were very understanding, and they did pay their money to us and file for a refund from the state. And as far as I know, they got the refund. But all the fuel that we were zapped on by the Department of Revenue was for non-taxable fuel. So the requirement is just not necessary. I think the dealer knows that he is responsible to act and make his decisions using good judgment. He knows that he's responsible that if he sells fuel as non-taxable, and it really is taxable, and he knows it, that he's going to be responsible for that if he doesn't collect the tax from the customer. So you still have the option of getting a certificate of use. If you feel that it's questionable or that you're just really not sure, that we don't know who the customer is or what have you. One final comment, and that is, I don't know if Steve Kettle or anyone from the Department of Revenue is there to testify, but just a comment on the proposed regulation from the Department of Revenue. My understanding is addition to the building, or I'm not really quite sure what. That's an added administrative burden on us that, again, is unnecessary. And finally, on that topic, it's my understanding that the statute as it exists now states that you shall, that, well, the word shall is in there, that we must obtain certificates of use from all of these customers. And if that's the case, then this the proposed regulation that would lessen the burden on us it goes against the statute. And so I don't. It doesn't appear to me that the regulatory route as a means of easing this problem is going to work, because you're going to have to change the statute to say that it's not a shall but it's a may. So I would again speak in favor of the bill and ask that you consider adding stationary power plants. That's the end of my comments. Unless anyone has any questions.
Questions? No questions, thanks, Bucky. Let's see. Roberta Coleman, there, would you like to ask a question?
We'll start out with 4341 Kent.
Yes, I represent petroleum sales here in Fairbanks, and I would just like to back up what Bucky and Walt were saying about the administrative cost for maintaining these certificates. It's unbelievable when you think of what we have to go through. And we were just audited in 88 also and just got done paying a $5,400 fine for delivering heating oil to commercial accounts. We went back to all of these accounts. They all signed papers saying that the fuel was used for heating oil. It was not used for diesel fuel, for motor fuel. And we still ended up paying it. We just have not had the manpower to go back and send out letters to all of our customers hoping that they would pay us the tax and apply for the refund. But our main concern is, yes, we don't want to be liable for these commercial account heating oil accounts, and it's the burden on us for the paperwork. It's just, we just can't quite handle it. We're not a big outfit like some of them, and we just don't have the money to put go out and hire a couple more people to take care of this. So it would be to our benefit to be able to deliver to these commercial accounts heating oil only without the certificates of use on file. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Yeah.
Right.
Well, so can I add one more thing that I finally remembered?
Well, okay.
The other thing I was going to mention is in the economic times we're having, buildings, commercial buildings are switching hands and having different people manage them daily. And it's not like the old days where once you had a customer, you could hopefully keep it for a long time. We have the people that own them switching them almost weekly in many cases. And so not only do we have to worry about the building, but the owner switching, that becomes more prominent. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, the other, this is Jack, looking up the statutes on the exemption provisions, and you're right, Walt and Bucky, that on second page, item number 3, 4340, 100, section 2K, and K is fuel used for other non-taxable purposes, as prescribed by regulations adopted by the department. And I guess that probably is where we get into the user certificate, because back in the 50s and the 60s, we only had one certificate. It was called Form 40, and all you had was you had to make a check on it. Is this fuel used for consumption in heating, or is this used in consumption in stationary power plants? But I guess we have to go to Steve and find out now where we're at as far as the regulations and see if that fits this bill.
So Jack, this is Shelley.
Yes, go ahead. I thought we'd get you out.
Well, I just want to make a minor correction. If you look at AS 4340.010, subsection L, it begins with, if the dealer has a reasonable belief at the time of sale or transfer that fuel that is sold or transferred is not to be used as motor fuel, the dealer need not collect the motor fuel tax. A little farther on in that subsection, it starts talking about a certificate of use. It says a certificate of use is not required for fuel for any domestic purpose in a single or multiple unit private dwelling, including motor homes or a fuel which is at least 10% alcohol by volume. It further states that an annual certificate of use is required for all other exemptions listed under 4340.102. So it's that particular section in statute that we believe Department of Revenue's regulations are in direct conflict with the new proposed regulations.
Yeah, I'm reading you loud and clear. In fact, we should probably, Mr. Chairman, we should probably
take a good hard look at that. And I think that if we just put in there, if the dealer determines, there ought to be just some way or other, because I know what Bucky's talking about. When you're shipping all of that fuel downriver, you've got nobody to sign, and you know it's going to, when it goes to ABEC or it's going to the village corporation, it's going for power plant uses. And so what do you do? Bill it, and then just try and get a certificate of use, or what do we do? So we'll take a look at that L side and see if we can do, if we can change that around. Thanks, Charlie.
We'll have to bring it back.
But if we need, we should
turn that. Okay, good. Does the department have anything?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Kittle, Director of Income and Excise Audit, Department of Revenue. I know you're not going to believe me if I tell you that I thought the department was trying to be a good guy here for a change, and it seems not to have worked out quite that way. I was prepared to give a long speech here and justify why the Department of Revenue is opposed to this legislation. I think from the discussion we've heard, you've had a good introduction to the issue. I haven't heard anything that I'd have to take exception to as far as how the legislation would work or how we got to where we are today. I would like to give you a little bit of historical perspective. Back in 1982, the law read, if a dealer has a reasonable belief that the fuel is going to be used in a tax-exempt manner, the dealer didn't have to collect the tax. And that's all it said. There wasn't a certificate of use requirement. It was all left on the dealer's shoulders to determine whether he thought he should collect the tax or not. And we went out and audited, and we found significant problems in the industry and began making adjustments, which required legislative change to add the certificate of use format. The certificate of use is essentially a protection to the dealer. So once the customer signed it, the dealer's off the hook for the tax. And the Department of Revenue, if it feels the tax ought to be collected, has to go look at the user. And we feel that it's working very well statewide. The only opposition seems to be coming from the interior, where there is significant sales of heating fuel to commercial customers. We recognize that. That's why we went public with regulations that we thought would ease the reporting burden. I'm sorry we're getting more testimony today on my regulations than I did when we went out to hearing. And maybe we could have made some changes in those regs during the hearing process so that the dealers would have been more satisfied with them instead of seeking legislative change. One final comment. The department's already charged with difficult task of trying to ensure collection of taxes statewide with motor fuel taxes. It's consumed everywhere you look in the state. We obviously don't have the staff to audit every sale of motor fuel in the state. And consequently, the dealers are shouldered with the burden most often of collecting the tax and making the determination to collect the tax and pay it over. And this is similar to how it's done in every other state. What this legislation will do is increase the number of potential taxpayers from the 100 or so qualified dealers that we have to numerous additional users of fuel, now that the liability may fall on their shoulders if they choose to take tax-free fuel and turn it into a taxable use. With that, if you have any questions, be happy to try and answer them.
Steve, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you get a lot of testimony when you put the rings out? Did you have the two major fuel dealer organizations? Did they testify? Were they in the mainstream of your regulatory changes?
Through the chair, Senator Cogdill, my memory is not the best, but if my recollection is that I had one person, Shelley Groudon, testify up in Fairbanks. believe, a couple people, really not associated directly with the industry in Anchorage, came in. But as far as the industry input or other dealers, I didn't get it. Now, we tried to publicize it as broadly as we could, and we sent every qualified dealer a copy of the proposal. Probably for a variety of reasons, it wasn't a hot issue statewide.
Okay.
I would, one more thing came to mind. Your discussion of 4340, I think it's 010L, and the limitation it places on the department to pull under the certificate of use certain types of fuel, and the restriction there. We looked at that restriction as well, and in working out what we thought was a compromise with the industry last year in our proposed regulations, we didn't have the strength of statutory support that we would have liked, but we felt that the reference to K, where it gives the department opportunity to write regulations to determine other fuels that may be non-taxable, was enough of a thread to allow us to write the regulations that we did write.
Well, it looks like it contradicts itself there a little bit, and we should probably clear that up. And Mr. Chairman, what I would suggest is that we continue this to the next meeting, and I'll get up with Steve, and I'll also get up with the agency, and I'll work with your staff, and we'll have this thing so that we can put it on a fast track. Well, we'll put it out there so we can look at it. Next available space we have.
No, you mean next available what? Meeting? Next meeting, huh?
At the next available time, and we're pretty well got our schedule. We'll have to look and see, anyway, exactly what day we can take it up. We'll take it up just as soon as possible.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, folks in Radio Land.
We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 180. And we'll go to Senate Bill 310. And we'll open the hearing on 310 at this time. At the last meeting, we discussed several amendments. And it should be enclosed in your packet. We have four amendments I'd like to look at. First one goes on page.
We're done with these things?
Yeah, we're done with this bunch of electronic gear here. Bill, on page 4, line 6. After conduct, insert or designate a representative to conduct. And that would then read, establish terms and conditions of employment by the authority and conduct. Or designated representative to conduct negotiations with employees. But that doesn't allow us
the authority may delegate that
right.
to its chairman or to its
director.
Director.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I move for adoption of the amendment.
And no objection, so ordered. Then on page 8, column line 19.
I can look at his office
and grab. Here, you can follow right here. We have number two. Okay, right after line 19, we'll insert a new section to read. I'll have a section 3.
A new section.
Yeah, just be new section 3, and it basically allows the authority to conduct the collective bargaining. Still allows the commissioner the final word. They have to concur with the commissioner.
Chairman.
Senator Fisher. Question on that one. The provision for a settlement of labor disputes by arbitration. Are we talking about a binding arbitration situation?
No, this
the commissioner is out of the house.
Let's get George. George is from legal, and he's one of put this together. George, can you explain that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is George Eberwolf, Legislative Counsel, Special Affairs Agency. The amendment that you have before you merely provides that the Alaska Marine Highway Authority will have the responsibility for negotiating labor contracts with its employees. In regard to allowing it to make provision for settlement of agreements by arbitration merely gives the power to provide for arbitration. It is open as to whether or not it is binding. It would be up to the discretion of the authority to impose those terms or agree to those terms in a contract.
Could they go to mediation? I mean, that's not prohibited. It seems to me that maybe mediation ought to be the first method to go, and if you don't settle it by a mediation approach, then when arbitration is kind of formal, isn't it? Whereas mediation is a little bit less informal.
Yes,
and,
it is.
I understand the mediator really has a lot of latitude to go meet with them individually and get something going. I would hate to see, do you have to put that in, or is mediation an automatic possibility of settlement?
No, it's not automatic, but this provision is merely discretionary on the authority. It says that they may agree to arbitration, but it does not prevent them from some less formal form of dispute settlement, such as mediation.
Okay, so mediation is something they can do without saying specifically.
Right.
Senator
Coggins.
But, George, isn't it right that when you go to arbitration, why then the function of the arbitration is decided before they go into the arbitration? Or do you have a statute that indicates how that's going to be, how that process goes? It's not binding, it's not final arbitration.
No, I think under this, it would allow the authority to establish its own terms under which
that's
it would
right.
enter into arbitration.
But they could say, we will agree to binding arbitration.
Yes, they could under this authority.
Right.
That anyway.
Yeah. Well, you can do that anyway.
They can go to arbitration, they can do it any way they want to agree to.
Yeah, I guess the only question I have is when you say binding arbitration to get a Californian coming up here, speaking now strictly for the sake of the state, not the other, the labor component, it'll always be a game.
Oh. This doesn't set up the rules of arbitration. All it says is settled by arbitration. There's several ways you can do it. Arbitration, you could call in three people, you could call in one person, there's several different ways. This just provides, it just says that they may, if they want to, that's available to them, settle it by arbitration. And they might agree that it's binding.
Okay, maybe I read a little different. What I read is saying that the collective bargaining agreement itself can have a section in there that says labor disputes will be settled by arbitration, and that's effective throughout the whole. I mean, it's just not an issue by issue, right?
Well, that's
or is it issue by issue?
Could be.
Mr. Chair, yes, it depends on the terms to which the contract makes arbitration apply. And they could limit it to just specific issues in the contract. They could provide that arbitration would be binding or non-binding, or just certain elements of the contract would be subject to binding arbitration.
Good point, but I mean, what my point is that you already have that now. Municipalities have that authority to take some to arbitration if they want to. One time when I was mayor in Indiana, I had the opposing side's wives arbitrate, and they did a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how long is binding?
How long is the collective bargaining agreement good for? Is that a year to year, or is it a multi-year agreement?
Mr. Chair, as a general rule, I couldn't say. I mean, for the most part, I would assume that it's up to the terms of the agreement.
And I guess I see the agreement as continuing to to infinity, you know, unless it's changed. So if initially you make a provision in that basic bargaining agreement for settlement of labor disputes by arbitration, aren't you locked into it? You don't get to choose each year whether you want to go to arbitration or not. Once it's there, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, yes. Once it's in the contract, it's there until the parties agree to take it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so it says that they do know. Do you know, George, if the present contracts allow that?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm not familiar with the current contracts that they have, Marine Highway parties.
I guess what I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is are we given in a way something that should be bargained for in the first place by saying, you know, just by throwing it out there that you may adopt and instead of, I guess I don't want to get involved in the collective bargaining process where we kind of give one side a little advantage over the other, and it's something that they should agree to and we should.
Sure, Senator Conner.
They have that now. That's part of the existing law. That's part of the existing law. All we're doing is changing the commissioner of transportation. To the authority,
right?
But the commissioner has it right now to put in the contracts the provision that collective bargaining agreements can be settled, because sometimes it's a lot better to establish those processes when everybody's talking to themselves than it is to when things get locked out. It's already in the law. This is existing statute.
Yeah. I guess what I'm really wondering is it on an issue-by-issue basis that they can apply arbitration, or is it once they adopt it, it's for everything?
It's your question.
See what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. That's up to them.
Yeah.
It's up to the commissioner now to do it issue-by-issue.
We're not changing anything, and the only thing that's available to the commissioner at this point. Time. So we're not changing, all we're changing is from the commissioner to the authority.
Okay.
Clear as mud.
Well.
I move the amendment number 2 and ask you to ask consent.
And no objection, so ordered. And we'll go to amendment number 3, page 10, line 1. The new bill section to read section 10, initial appointment of members of the Alaska Marine Highway Authority, notwithstanding AS 1970-020B enacted by section 2 of this act, the terms of the initially appointed members of the Alaska Marine Highway Authority shall be staggered as set out in AS 3905-0554.
All that does, it's
already in statute that they're staggered. This is just to clarify that is what we're doing.
Move for adoption, as an added sentence.
Hearing no objections, ordered. And then the last amendment 4, page 9,
page 2.
You still got the wrong one. Yeah, that's out.
Is out?
Yeah, that's out.
Says legislation by the
caucus.
Right.
Page 9, lines 11 through 13. To delete all the material, insert section 6. And then what we do is we delete what was Marine Pilots and Master Mates was in C. And we take that out and add as then on the F, we add Alaska Marine Highway Authority, so that covers all the employees. All the employees are in that same status. Otherwise it would be redundant.
You're taking out Alaska Marine Authority and its officers and employees.
Yeah, see, the officers and employees of the following boards, commissions, and authorities they're exempt employees. And master mates and pilots at this time are already exempt. So what we do is, when you put into an authority, then all the employees become exempt.
So 28 was a new subsection that you added, and what you're doing is that you're bringing it back to subsection 11 within
That's
the
right.
existing statute.
That's right.
And you're adding, you repealed C.
Yes, because that only covers one
one particular employee putting in the took out master mates and pilots.
We put
Alaska Marine Highway.
Those are all existing.
Covers all existing statute,
and all we're doing is cleaning it up and putting Alaska Marine Authority in there.
Right.
Move, ask unanimous consent.
Hearing no objections to order. So, we will now, that will be a committee substitute. Anybody else have any more? What?
You're going to bring it back to us now at a later date when you can bring it in, plug it into time certain?
No, that would be the committee substitute. See, I had my minutes all ready to go, Senator. So we'll move out the...
I have a question just on the bill itself. Is it okay?
Sure.
That's
better to bring it up now. We're about to... Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, because the director gets $300 a day. How does that apply to a state employee who may be a member of a maritime union, but he's also a state employee? And let's say the normal salary for that day is 173 or 175. Does he jump up to 300 because he's still a state employee, but he has this function? And then he would have to take
board.
A day vacation?
He's a member of the board, sure. Why would he be treating him differently?
Well, I'm just wondering why we come up with $300 a day.
Same as the railroad board.
That's the railroad.
Oh,
so they set the precedence.
Yeah, but that's making a profit, isn't it?
Well, it is according to legislative pay.
Yeah, right. Oh, gosh.
Okay.
Well, let's put it paperweight and get, all right?
That was a sidewinder.
We have very good people, public members working for free.
Yeah, gosh.
They ought to make it legal look very good today.
We now have committee substitute.
Yes,
gentlemen.
You want to move it?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 310.
Yes.
Be moved reported on. From the committee with individual recommendations. Ask unanimous consent.
Hearing no objections, so ordered. Senator,
you
now have it.
You're do that after we do it.
Go.
This one,
I didn't realize.
Now you're not.
Yeah.
We should have done that.
We didn't have your amendments ready.
We all knew what he meant.
Anything further to come before the committee?
When you're snoozing, you're losing.
If not, we are adjourned.